this show, there will be discussions of the true crime variety. Murder, mayhem, violence, and adult themes will be talked of. Listener discretion is advised. People, people, people! Welcome to Grace's World of True Crime Podcast. I am Grace, and I'm here to share about everything going on with the podcast world from last week. So this week I decided on my deep dive. I just wanted to do like a fun one that I truly enjoyed. Some of these cases are real tough, and I do have some real serious, podcasts coming up. So this one is still very serious, but it's a Dateline. I'm going to be covering the thing about Pam. It's a deep dive. Deep dive. So this week, I decided to do a deep dive on the thing about Pam. So Wondery came. It's like Wondery is the streaming. It was done by Dateline NBC and hosted by Keith Morrison. Producers are Kathy Singer and Christine Fillmore. There is a lot more people who have worked on this. I was started to write them down before I realized, oh God, just look on Dateline NBC. They are probably all in there. And they are all fantastic for putting out this really well-researched, crazy story. So episode one is called They're Still Counting. They're still counting as in the coroner counting stab wounds, as in 56 stab wounds to a woman named Betsy Ferreira. And so what we know is that her husband, Russ, came in to the scene. He saw Betsy on the floor, just covered in blood, and immediately thought she had killed herself and was calling and crying on the 911 call, enough so that people actually thought he was being over the top, and that it was fake. But anyway, so Russ is being interviewed. They let him go, but on January 4th, 2012, it was 8 days after Betsy Ferreira was found dead, he was arrested for her murder. He still is very... He's an innocent man. He was always said he's innocent of this. So the reason why he thought that she had killed herself is because this is not really the first time. But also, Betsy had terminal cancer. And I think you can say she was kind of going downhill. And perhaps he really thought that she had killed herself. Now, Pam Hupp is her friend who works with her at the insurance company. And when she was interviewed, she would say that Russell was abusive. It was uncomfortable at how much he would abuse her verbally. And that she had confided in Pam. Betsy confided in Pam that Russell would play this pillow game where he would try and put a pillow over her face to see if she would die. But anyway, this did not make Russell look good. Episode 2 is a matter of trust. So the trial against Russell Ferreira is underway. He is found guilty, and the defense attorney was saying how frustrated he was that the judge would not allow him to cross-examine Pam Hupp about the life insurance that she was on with Betsy. So just 4 days before her death, Pam was listed as the beneficiary instead of Russell. She said this is because Betsy was confiding in her that she was afraid Russell wouldn't spend the money correctly. He would be too grieved and just spend all the money. And she wanted Pam to have it so that she can give her daughter something. By the way, Betsy's daughters get nothing. Absolutely nothing. Pam gets it all. Episode 3 is Manna from Heaven. So Pamela Hupp is being questioned about why she was the beneficiary, why she closed the trust for the daughters that she had started up just days after Russell's conviction. And this is kind of like the insurance fraud. The girls, Betsy's daughters, are trying to basically claim that Pamela just is doing something shady because she is not giving the girls anything, and she didn't pay for the funeral. They needed this stuff for funeral expenses, and she absolutely did not work in Betsy's best interest at all. But what we learn in this episode is Kathy, who's the producer of this Dateline, or producer of Dateline, was doing a lot of research on this case and had been directly in contact with Pam Hupp the entire time. So in episode 4, it says, "Say hi to Kathy. Pam is cool as a cucumber at her insurance fraud hearing. She gets the insurance money because all the paperwork was correct and they couldn't prove that that Betsy was trying to, you know, give the girls the money in any paperwork. So unfortunately, the paperwork was correct. She is just confident as you could be. She looks directly at the Dateline camera that she walks out of the courtroom, just like head held high, shoulders back, looking directly at the Dateline camera and says, "Say hi to Kathy." And they all kind of were like, "What does that mean?" Anyway, but the next episode is "I'm a Little Cold." When Pam reports a break-in and the intruder is dead in her living room, a few odd things occur. First off, there's the fake 911 panic. So what the 911 operator notices is that until she says, "Hello, 911, it's dead silent on the other end. That's very unusual because if you were indeed dealing with something at the time, there would be struggling and yelling and what have you. They found that there was a rug under the bleeding intruder. And they thought this was odd, that there was a rug conveniently placed under him so as not to mess up the actual carpeting. Weird. And there was a witness from the trailer park who reported Pam's odd predatory behavior. So what was going on is that she was driving around in this trailer park, and this lady was just walking her dog when she approaches her and says, "Hey, do you need a babysitter? Or would you like to be a babysitter?" And she's like, "What?" First off, who asks a complete stranger from the trailer park to watch someone's kids? That's super weird. So she decides to report her after, you know, this happens. Another thing that occurs is the man on the floor, whose name is Louis Gumpenberger. Louis Gumpenberger, the parents were questioned, you know, when this all went down, said that he could not physically run. He was disabled. He just probably couldn't even physically do any of this intrusion that occurred. But what was going on was Pam was trying to say that there were two men involved, one of them being the newly acquitted Russell, who, after there was a lot of evidence brought in, because that's a whole other story, Russell ends up being gets a new trial and with a new judge, and new prosecutor too, and is found that he did not have anything to do with his wife's murder. Okay, so but anyway, moving on, because this is just crazy. So on episode 6, is anything can happen. So Pam is arrested and is waiting her murder trial for the murder of Louis Gumpenberger, and they. Investigators start to look at the other two people who died after Pam was the last to see them, including not just Betsy Faria. I just lost her name. Faria. Not just Betsy Faria, it was also her mother, Shirley Newman, who died falling out of her balcony. At first, it was ruled accidental, but since they re-looked at all the evidence, the new medical examiners ruled her death undetermined. So they also found that there was three to four times the dosage of Ambien in her mother's system, in Miss Shirley Newman's system. And they felt that they just couldn't rightfully say that she had an accidental death at that point. So Pam at her trial decides to take a plea. She takes an Alfred plea, which is basically admitting guilt without admitting guilt. And in this plea deal, she is to remain in jail for the rest of her life. She shows no remorse and refuses to admit any wrongdoing. So Betsy's murder is still considered unsolved. She does deserve justice, and And Kathy, the producer, who learned that Pam was going around to these trailer parks and impersonating her, which was also the crazy part that, you know, touched back to Kathy. Perhaps it was why Pam said, "Say hi to Kathy for me." And that is because she personally maybe looked up to her a little. Maybe she was just being so manipulative. She's all of these things. She just seems like a cold-blooded psychopath just using people. So that's what she did. She impersonated Kathy from Dateline and said that she was doing these clips for 911 impersonations or something. And Dateline's like, no, we don't do that, obviously. So Kathy wants to see this through. This isn't a completely done podcast because we still need justice for Betsy. And we're going to make sure that that happens. So then after Pam's hearing and she is led away to, you know, spend the rest of her life in jail, she asks to use the restroom. And as she goes to the restroom and a female officer is right there, she takes a pen and stabs herself in the neck and wrists, trying to commit suicide. So what was crazy about this even is as she's stabbing herself in the stall and the officer's like, "Hey, are you okay in there?" Pam's just like, "I'm fine." So needless to say, Pam did not die. She was put in, went to the hospital to get treated. I guess she really, according to the doctor, she really tried her damnedest and, was there was no faking her suicide attempt. She really was trying to stab herself with a ballpoint pen. When investigators were asked if, there was some similarities between her injuries and that of Betsy's, they basically said, well, it's an active investigation, no comment. We'll take that as, yeah, a little bit. Okay, so that was it. That is, Dateline's The Thing About Pam. This story had so many twists and turns. It was amazing, and I absolutely love Keith Morrison. I could listen to Keith Morrison just talk about anything at all. The way his delivery is fantastic. And Pam's case just has so many twists and turns that you couldn't even possibly ride them all without just giving it a full listen. So this was like probably the second or third time I've heard The Thing About Pam. There are other great Dateline reports. This was one of them. Go check it out. If you really are looking for a podcast that just takes you through a whole, not just a case, but a crazy case, this is it. You will absolutely love it. This segment we like to call the weeklies. For all those weekly cases, you know. The next case I'd like to talk about this week is on Unjust and Unsolved with Maggie Freeling. I really like this podcast. She does a great job at all her research and her contact with the prisoners who are listed as being innocent through the Innocence Project. So this case is about David Thorne. David Thorne is from Alliance, Ohio. He was born in Cleveland in 1972. And he was father to one of the kids of the victim. Her name is Yvonne Lame. She was 26 years old, and her throat was slit, and this is how she was found. So David had an alibi after the police questioned him, but 3 months later, the police were interviewing a young man who knew both David and Yvonne, who constantly needed help. He was struggling. He was a former foster kid in the system and was not all together. So David was, you know, taking him to work with him and gave him some money to buy a car so that he wouldn't have to keep giving him rides. But the officers turned this around and said that this was a murder for hire plan and that David gave him money so he could take out Yvonne. So David was put away on this, testimony only. There was DNA that was collected that was never tested. And Did I say David had an alibi? He had a solid alibi. Oh yeah, I did say that. But so currently, David is sitting in prison, and against the witness had since recanted a while ago, but they refused to test the DNA, and he is still sitting in prison. So this is right out of sort of my home state area. I know that Alliance is kind of crazy, west, like the Wild West out there with all the like exotic animals, which, by the way, David had like lion cubs and stuff, so I don't know. It is very harkens back to all the Tiger King rage that was going on. So Alliance, Ohio, is kind of a country like that. My point is that it kind of hit me a little bit because it was, from my home state, and there are things that we could do, talk to, call prosecutors and raise a stink, but he does not have any money. He does not have a legal team because he ran out of all of it through the appeal process. So you can go to, David Thorne, Thorne, to see his website about getting justice and what you can do to help. And that's why I love Unjust and Unsolved. This week on Serial Killers, I learned about the hippie trail killer, or the snake, or the serpent, or whoever. His name is Charles Subraj, and he is a complete pain in the ass. So part one came out this past Monday, and part two came out recently. So anyway, he was born in 1944 in Indochina, what we would know as modern-day Vietnam. His mother left his dad because Daddy-O had a secret other family. So his mom marries a French officer, and they move to Marseilles. I don't know how to say it. So Charles has major issues with manipulation. He goes back and forth between his dad and his mom and is constantly trying to do crimes for attention, and he's just a little bitch. But he is pretty much a con man for, like, as a full-time job. He's constantly stealing cars. Oh, he has got this big car racket from like India. So anyway, he bounces around from India to Europe to, I don't think he ever went to America, but mostly like in Vietnam, and he is just bouncing around. He frames his brother, and that gets his brother stuck in a Turkish prison for like 18 years, which is some crap. He ends up actually escaping to prisons, I believe by drugging his prison guard and then just walking out the front door. This guy is absolutely crazy, kind of smart, but eventually he does end up becoming arrested for the murder of, actually, there's a, in like Indonesia and India. He became known as the Bikini Killer, I think, like in Indonesia, because there were like a few tourists in their bikinis like floating in the water. It's pretty nasty. But I always appreciate serial killers so that my knowledge of all serial killers is kind of broadened. I don't know why, but it's very fascinating to see like their background, how they were raised as children, and then like the second half is usually the murders and the trial and their subsequent end. Yeah, Charles Sobhraj had many names. They stuck with the hippie trail killer because he killed a lot on the hippie trail, which was also like back in the 60s where people like to like go, or backpackers like to go to like find themselves. Anyway, bad dude. Thanks, serial killers. This week on Crime Junkie, we look into the case of Faith Hedgepeth. So, Faith was a college student who was found brutally beaten with an empty liquor bottle in her apartment bedroom. Her roommate and best friend reports her murder, but we have to ask, is she really her best friend? We don't know. There is male DNA on the scene, and police are getting closer to an answer. It's not a cold case, it's a very hot case, but it is currently unsolved. Look at the case of Faith Hedgepeth on Crime Junkie if you want to learn more about this crazy, crazy story where her best friend might actually be the devil in disguise. We're all innocent till proven guilty. I'm just going to say that, but does not look good. The next crime of this week I'm going to cover is on True Crime Garage. They had done part one and part two of the Mount Vernon murder. So this occurred in Mount Vernon, New Hampshire. This involves a mother by the name of Kimberly Cates and her daughter, Jamie Cates, who's 11 years old. They are sleeping in the same bed because Kimberly's husband is out on business. And Jamie is, you know, they're keeping each other company at night. When suddenly Kimberly hears a sound outside, is like, Jamie, is that you? Before meeting her end. So they were hacked with, I believe, machetes and knives. And Jamie was still alive, though very, very critically injured. She was able to identify a few of the boys, which, by the way, this is like a thrill kill. Done by four boys, four to five, if you consider one of them part of the planning process. But these are 17, 18, 19, and 20-year-old, not yet men, who decided to be thrill killers and just did this for fun. So this was an absolutely just brutal case, but you do get to have that satisfying justice is served and get an idea for how awful these young idiots turned out to be. I don't know what else to say about it other than it could happen to anybody, I guess. It could happen in any town. You would think that you're safe. You're not. Just know that you're not safe. You never know when these dumb teenagers are just gonna, like, hack you to death. Don't hack me to death, please, my God. Be good. Please be good. And just know the signs and keep track of your kids and, yeah. All the good stuff you should be doing in a society anyway. This week on Crime Countdown, they did stolen body parts. Ooh, man. So think Kennedy and Einstein's brains, Napoleon's penis, and Oliver Cromwell's 30-year piked head is all in here. If you need to check out Crime Countdown, it is fast. You know, it's something you can do real quick. They're like 30 minutes. Boom, boom, boom. Super awesome. Spooky for Halloween stuff. And you might learn something along the way. So that is Crime Countdown. That is with Ash and Elena from Morbid. They are doing this podcast countdown, and it's a lot of fun. Just get into it. All right, here we get to it. My absolute favorite podcast. I already sang. I'm sorry. I need to stop singing. So this week on Thursday, they released Wine and Crime, which was Liverpool Crimes. So that was all about the city of Liverpool, England, and some of the crazy crimes that occurred there. Also that came out on Thursday was Obsessed with Disappeared, and that is about the disappearance of John Glasgow. So a quick, brief overview of this case is John was the auditor for like a Dillard subsidiary, you know, like a company that's like joined with Dillard's, which is like a department store here. I'm going to stop saying I'm trying, but God, is that a word that just kills me. John was a part of that accounting, and the guy before him was doing some shady stuff. So when John was on the chopping block with the auditors, he lost his shit and disappeared. He didn't talk to his wife anymore and straight up is gone. So that is the disappearance of John Glasgow. He kind of freaked out after it's getting audited. So that's just scary. I don't know. Where is John? So on I call it TCO, but it is True Crime Obsessed. It came out on Wednesday. Soon they're going to come out with part two of Death at the Mansion. But this week we did Death at the Mansion part one. Rebecca Zahau. So Rebecca Zahau is a talented, beautiful woman who is found naked, tied hands and feet, swinging from a noose around her neck outside the balcony of the mansion she lived on. The police call it a suicide, but the Oxygen Channel with Paul Holes and Billy Jensen and every other forensic expert is going to solve and get to the bottom of this mystery. It's a terrible, it's horrible, and I think we're going to get to the bottom of what actually happens in part two, so I'm looking forward to that. On Sunday on Morbid, it was episode 178, The Chicago Ripper Crew. This was a set of four guys in Chicago who also were thrill killers. Seems to be a theme this week. Lots of guys getting together to be horrible. Guys, why don't you get together and, like, crochet or something? Or have a book club? Be creepy without being destructive and awful. I don't know. Just a thought. But that was Morbid. I think that's going to wrap it up for all of my favorites this time. I didn't have a lot of chance to write as much down as I wanted to, so a lot of me going, is me just trying to get through it and get my thoughts together. I'm trying so hard not to fall for these habits that happen that you don't realize until you hear yourself being recorded all the time. So with that in mind, I'm going to say thank you so much for coming to my show and watching and listening to me. If this weren't already 3 minutes in, I'd be just a mess and be like, forget it. I have to just completely redo this, but I won't. I'm going to keep going. If you want to follow me on Facebook, I'm Grace's World of True Crime Podcasts. The same goes for Instagram and Twitter. That's Grace's World of True Crime Podcasts. I believe I'm Grace True Crime. Definitely on Facebook, Instagram, G True Crime. It doesn't matter. Just look for Grace's World of True Crime Podcasts. You can find me on Spotify, Google Podcasts. Not every single platform, but just click on my link if you look at my Facebook or my Instagram or my Twitter, and you will find what you're looking for. You will find my link to all of the ways that you can stream this. If you want to support me, you can also click on that little Anchor link and click on the support button, and that just puts a little extra cheddar in my wallet. If you so think I deserve it. I probably don't, but I do like money, so, you know, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, that's fine. I really am just appreciative of anyone even listening at this point. Thank you so much. And I look forward to next week of Grace's World of True Crime Podcasts. Good night. Bye.
Yeah, I just felt like playing you guys out with a little something. Nice, you know? Good luck, everybody. Don't be an irony. We love you. Bye. Next time. Goodbye. See ya.